Today on Blue 58, we've done all the prep, so what are the Packers actually going to do in the draft?
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one and only podcast of thepowersweep.com. I am your host, John Meerdink, and I'm happy to be with you here for another episode. It's time. Let's talk about what the Packers are actually going to do. Here's how I want to do this. I want to go through some overall thoughts about the draft class. We're going to go through the top 30 visits that the Packers have gone through, at least a few of them, not every single one of them. I'm not just going to read out a list of 30 names. I'm going to talk about a couple scenarios where the Packers could move around the draft board a little bit. Then I want to give some predictions about what I think the Packers are going to do first in the first round, then throughout the remainder of the draft, and we'll see where that gets us as far as an episode here. To start, I think I like this draft class for the Packers. I'm not sure how well it necessarily lines up with their needs, but there are interesting pieces that can fit the Packers' needs. Let's put it that way. The offensive line prospects are very concentrated, I think, towards the top, but there are opportunities to add talent on the offensive line throughout, and I think the Packers are going to do that. I think it gets complicated in the first round, and we're going to talk about that a little bit toward the end here. Safety is thin. It feels like this is a class where the Packers are going to struggle to get a lot of depth at safety. That's not to say there aren't options, but they're going to have to make sure they get to that early, probably within the first 2 to 3 rounds, if they really want to make sure that they've got someone who can contribute next to Xavier McKinney. It is thin. There are still, again, options throughout. I think I would never encourage anybody to have any kind of like despair or worry about what the Packers are going to come out of the draft with, because there are always going to be players that surprise us, players that didn't test for medical reasons, players that just didn't test at all, players who were in a bad situation in college, who have skills that maybe they didn't even know that they had, and they get onto an NFL field and things turn around. You just never know. Guys who are transitioning positions. We've talked about that with Anthony Johnson a lot over the past year or so. This was his first real foray into playing safety for the Packers this last year. It's still very much an open question about how that's going to work out, but there are players out there like that. Johnson is probably a good example of somebody you should, you know, have an open mind about because of the process that it's going to take him to become a useful NFL player, but he's still got good size, he's a good athlete, and there are other prospects like that in the draft that maybe we haven't touched on just because they're in the same position that Johnson was coming out. And then I think we should keep in mind that there is value at positions that don't necessarily seem like needs. Defensive line, I think you can go back and forth on that a lot. It's not really a screaming short-term need. The Packers should probably be building for that a little bit more long-term. But there's value to be had here in the draft, and I think that's reflected in some of the visits that the Packers have had, that they're exploring some needs on the defensive line that may, again, not seem obvious right away. There's also a lot of value at wide receiver. This, as Tyler Brook said in our conversation with Justice Mosqueda and Tyler Brook, this is a very deep wide receiver class, and I kind of think this is just how it's going to be at wide receiver going forward. As the college game continues to get more and more pass-oriented and you have guys playing in that system, you're going to have a lot of good wide receivers, a lot of guys who can contribute at the NFL level, getting a lot of quality reps in college. And I think we're seeing that in draft classes over the years, that it seems like the number of quality receivers is just steadily going up. So I think there is a situation where, depending on what the Packers end up with in terms of picks, either by trading up or trading back, the value at wide receiver might just be too good to ignore. So they end up spending a pick on a receiver when you might not expect it, especially when it doesn't immediately look like they need a receiver. And we do have to say, again, a lot of the idea of the Packers not needing help at wide receiver hinges on some big what-ifs or some big questions. Jaden Reed being better than he was as an already very good rookie. Dontavian Wicks taking significant steps forward. Romeo Doubs continuing to take steps forward. Christian Watson figuring out what's going on with his hamstrings. You can go down and down the depth chart and continue to ask questions like that. It's not a sure thing that the receiver room is going to be better in 2024 than it was in 2023. It seems fair to assume that some of those guys will be better, but to assume that everybody takes a step forward, or even that everyone gets through the year healthy, might be too big of an ask here. So I don't think it's out of the question to look at wide receivers. Finally, and this is something that's maybe more for me than for anybody else, but just a word of caution and maybe not caution, but just thinking about the draft in general. I've tried to work on becoming more open-minded about every prospect in the draft every year. We can talk a lot about athletic thresholds and grades and background and the system that guys played in and stuff like that. And you can find any number of reasons to count any player out if you want to, or, you know, to sell yourself on any player. But I would just say this. Anybody can be good. Any pick can work out. Even if it doesn't make sense immediately on its face, it's not necessarily reason to give up hope. And look, we all want these guys to be great anyway. Even if it seems like a ridiculous thing to do at the time, that doesn't mean it's not a good long-term idea. Or even if it doesn't work out, it doesn't mean that it was done for bad reasons or because someone is blind or whatever. Sometimes things just don't work out. So that's the attitude I'm going to try to have going into draft weekend. Anybody can be good. Let's try not to be too pessimistic about anybody, no matter who the Packers end up picking, even though there are some guys that would probably drive you a little bit crazy if the Packers did end up picking them. Like, say, if the Packers picked a quarterback in the first round, that would be a little bit frustrating considering what the Packers have right now in Jordan Love and everybody else and what they're trying to build around Love and things like that. So that's not to say it couldn't be frustrating or you wouldn't wish that the Packers did different things in the draft, but let's try to remember that we want these guys to be good no matter if we think the Packers made a smart move by taking them or not. Top 30 visits. Let's talk through a few of the guys that we've talked about already, just refreshing our memory. The top 30 visits are the most significant ones, the most in-depth. There may be other visits or local pro days, but these are the most important ones to keep in mind here. So, first offense, running back, we've got Ray Davis coming in for a visit out of Kentucky. He was a tier one athlete, tier one prospect in our running back preview. Not an overall great athlete, but good enough. Mid sevens, low sevens, relative athletic score. Moves pretty well at 5'8 and 211 pounds. 4.52, 40-yard dash, plenty productive at Kentucky. Seems to check a lot of the boxes for what the Packers are looking for. At wide receiver, just found out this morning that Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina came in. Very fun height, weight, speed prospect. 6'1, 221 pounds. Listed at 227, actually. At South Carolina, ran a 4.39 40. That one makes my ears prick up a little bit. Just that amount of speed at that weight and that height, pretty solid. Reminds me, as we said in the wide receiver episode, of a guy that Ted Thompson would have taken. His highlights are an absolute blast to watch. And I realize that every wide receiver should have a good highlight tape. Leggett's or something else. It's fun to watch him with the ball in his hands. He just goes. He's so fast and running it at the mid 220s. Let's just say 220 plus is just an added bonus there, as all bonuses are. On the offensive line, they've brought Tyler Guyton in, a tackle from Oklahoma. Very big guy, 6'7, 322 pounds, primarily a right tackle, though I think the Packers would assume that everybody they take can play either side because that's just how they've operated over the past few years. Scouting reports have been good but not great on Guyton. But he meets all the thresholds and things like that. On the defensive line, Mason Smith out of LSU has come in. He was a tier two prospect for us. 8.96 relative athletic score, cleared our numbers on pressure production ratio with a 0.8 for his career. He is the bigger of the two LSU defensive linemen getting top end draft buzz. Smith is 6'5", about 300 pounds, more prototypical size than his teammates there on the – or teammate on the defensive line there, Byron, whatever his name is. Forget his last name. Doesn't matter because the Packers didn't bring him in for a visit, and they're probably not going to draft him anyway. On the edge, they brought in Marshawn Neyland out of Western Michigan. Tier 3 prospect, just missing on the productivity stuff. A production ratio of 1.09 for his career, 11.65% pressure rate for his career. Real, real close. He would be – I think an interesting pick for the Packers because of the guys that we talked about on the edge this year, one of the bigger prospects who meets what we historically look for among edge rushers. So if the Packers want to stick with their big edge rusher philosophy, Neyland is a guy to watch. At linebacker, they brought in Edgerrin Cooper out of Texas A&M. Very fast, pretty small. Also, Trevin Wallace out of Kentucky. a little bit bigger, but fewer plays on the ball than Cooper has, though he hits plenty hard, legit just blows guys up. A little bit stiff movement-wise, but he is a day three prospect, so you gotta accept some warts there as well. Then defensive backs. Ketan Oladapo out of Oregon State, a safety, tier one prospect, hit on absolutely everything. Of the late round defensive backs that we looked at, he's my favorite height, weight, speed prospect, 6'2", 216 pounds, ball hawk machine, the most of the safeties and slots that we looked at, just making plays on the ball left, right, and center. Fantastic. He checks all the boxes, and as a late round guy, you can't really ask for much more than that. Then Jerrion Jones comes in, a slot corner out of Florida State, tier two guy. Made it on athleticism and on our coverage grade stuff, but missed it. Didn't make that many plays on the ball, so didn't hit the ball hawk threshold. But a little speed burner, 4.38, 40-yard dash, just a shade under 6 feet tall, 190 pounds, nearly 5'11 and 7/8 is his official height. I nearly wrote 5'12 in my notes, if that gives you any idea of how draft burned out I am on the prep stuff. But it's been fun. It's been a good year to do draft stuff. Other notable guys the Packers have brought in. Not going to do the full list here, but just want to run them down real quickly. Amarius Mims, an offensive tackle out of Georgia. We talked about Guyton being a big guy. Mims is even bigger. 6'8", 340 pounds, but a little bit light on experience. From Pro Football Focus, quote, played only 682 snaps over the past two seasons with just 8 starts due to biding his times at a talented program and an injury in 2023, end quote. There are some red flags there. Have to imagine part of the reason the Packers brought him in was an injury recheck. Just want to see where he's at with the stuff that he's been dealing with. But tons of potential there, tons of size. He'd be an outlier on the Packers' offensive line right now, among their starters at least. Though some of their backup tackles are very, very big. Caleb Jones, Luke Tenuta, a couple examples there. Another offensive line prospect. I think the Packers very seriously are considering an offensive line early. Defensive linemen Michael Hall Jr. out of Ohio State and Christian Boyd out of Northern Illinois were also in for top 30 visits. Hall, pretty wild pressure rate for a defensive lineman. I almost said for an Ohio State player. That's not accurate. 12.15% pressure rate. Very, very good there. And Christian Boyd, not super productive at Northern Illinois, but good size. 6'2", 320 pounds. Among the 23 defensive linemen that we sorted through in the top 250, he was the fourth heaviest. So some size up front for the Packers, which is something we've been asking for a couple years. Austin Booker off the edge in Kansas, also in for a visit. 6'4", 240 pounds. Very, very productive. Missed on athleticism, but blew it out of the water on both the production ratio and pressure rate numbers. No concerns there. Just interesting from a size perspective, Packers bringing in a 240-pound edge rusher. I think if they are going to go with somebody in the later rounds, they're probably going to look for somebody who's a little bit more of like the bendy athletic edge more than the big edge setters like they have in Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, Lucas Van Ness, Kingsley Enagbare, J.J. Enagbare, whatever you want to call them. Those are the bigger, heavier guys that they've historically tended towards. Booker would be a bit of a tendency breaker there. Finally, wanted to mention Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Alabama coming in for a visit. Didn't hit on our thresholds, but has good productivity numbers. Probably the highest regarded defensive back that figures to be available roughly when the Packers are going to be picking outside of Cooper DeJean. So worth keeping that in mind. Wouldn't be my favorite pick at 25, but I don't think we can ignore what the Packers might be considering there. And they do have needs at corner for sure. As Eric Stokes continues to figure out where he's at in his NFL career. And I guess as the Packers try to continue to figure out where Eric Stokes is, they probably could stand to add some talent on the outside. And Stokes might not be long for the Packers if that is the case there. But they could use some depth at corner, and McKinstry is somebody very, very highly regarded by many draft analysts, just not one of our favorite players, doesn't check some of the boxes we look for. Got to talk about trading up. A couple of people asked prior to our mailbag episode, about trading up. I actually lost your questions, so I was not unable to include them in the episode, but I figured it made more sense to put them in here. So if you were one of the people that asked about trading up, this is me getting back to you. Sorry I don't have your names. Want to credit people when they ask questions, because I'm really grateful for everybody who chooses to write in and drop messages our way to help us make this show. So I appreciate that, and sorry we couldn't include your names here. But trading up, a couple people asked about this. First and foremost, how high could the Packers actually get? I used the Jimmy Johnson draft trade draft pick trade value chart. A lot of different nouns that you, and adjectives you've got to put in there. But that was the chart that I used to calculate these. There are some other charts out there. We do know that the Johnson chart or ones like it are still in use by NFL teams today, even if they are a little bit outdated. Very on brand for the NFL and NFL coaches to continue using something that maybe doesn't accurately reflect value just because it's convenient and it's what they've always done. But I'm using that for that reason, just trying to keep things as simple as possible. So using that chart, how high could the Packers get? Well, keeping it relatively realistic, if they traded their first-round pick and both second-round picks, they could probably get as high as 7th overall if the Tennessee Titans are willing to make that trade with them. They'd be trading out 1,530 points of draft value and getting about 1,500 back in. On the board, according to the consensus mock draft databases, rankings there, if you got to 7, you would most likely have some combination of J.J. McCarthy, Joe Alt, Dallas Turner, and Brock Bowers on the board, as well as a bunch of guys that come after that. But that's 7 through 10 on the consensus mock draft board, big board right now. If the Packers traded their first and one of their seconds, so let's say their first and 41st picks, they could probably get as high as 12th overall and swap with Denver. They'd be sending out 1,210 points of value and getting back 1,200. On the board at that point, you've got Quinion Mitchell, who's 11th out of Toledo, their great defensive back there. Terrion Arnold, another defensive back out of Alabama. Laiatu Latu out of UCLA, the edge rusher there, as well as Jared Verse, the edge from Florida State. And then Byron Murphy, there's the other Myron I wasn't thinking about. He doesn't go to LSU, went to Texas. Byron Murphy was the one I was trying to remember the name of, the LSU guy, somebody else. Doesn't matter. We'll figure it out if they end up drafting him, and they won't. But anyway, he's the defensive lineman out of Texas, 15th on the big board. That could be in consideration there. First and 58th, as well as throwing in pick 202 to sweeten the deal, make it work out exactly numbers-wise, gets you to 15th, swapping with the Colts. You're sending out about 1,051 points of value and getting 1,050 back. Murphy is there from Texas. The offensive lineman, Fashanu, out of Penn State, not even going to attempt the first name. Talise Fuaga out of Oregon State there, the offensive lineman there. Cooper DeJean, currently 18th on the big board, out of Iowa, would be in the range there. And Brian Thomas, the wide receiver out of LSU, would be in the range there as well. Say you just want to move up a little bit. Keep this one in the back of your mind because I think it's probably what we're looking at here. Say they wanted to jump up to 20. Pittsburgh is at 20. That pick is valued at 850 points on the Johnson chart. Trading 25 and pick number 88 gets you to 870 points of value, which gets you up to 20 if Pittsburgh is willing to do the deal. In the range there, Troy Fatanu out of Washington, the offensive lineman, J.C. Latham out of Alabama, another lineman there, Amarius Mims, 22, out of Georgia, another offensive lineman, Nate Wiggins, the cornerback out of Clemson, and then Kool-Aid McKinstry out of Alabama. That's 20 through 24 on the big board right now. So if the Packers wanted to move around, those are some of the names that they could be looking at. What if they wanted to trade back, though? I don't want to get too out into the weeds going too far beyond the first round here, so you could talk about some trade backs that the Packers could do in the second round. Obviously, last year they had the masterful deal moving back a couple times in the second round that allowed the Packers to get Jaden Reed and Carl Brooks and Dontayvion Wicks basically through just trading one pick a couple of times, just stacking up a bunch of value and getting all three of those guys not too shabby there. We could do that. There's endless permutations out there. Let's just focus on the Packers' first-round picks. You probably don't want to go too far back if you're considering trading out of the first round because the Packers also pick at 41 and 52 there. But Carolina picks at 33 and 39. So if Carolina wanted to move up, they seem like an ideal trade partner because they can move up a little bit and also still get another second-round pick pretty early in the second round. So they jump up from 33 to 25. It would probably include something like 33, 101, and 142 for 25. That's 720 points of value going out for the Panthers, 711 coming back their way. Flip that. 720 out for the Packers, 711 coming back in. So they're giving up a little bit, but they're stacking up more draft picks. And crucially, pick number 142 there is a fifth rounder. And the Packers don't have a pick in the fifth round because of the Rasul Douglas trade. They were able to move up a little bit in the third round by trading Rasul Douglas, but they actually had to give up a fifth round pick to do it. So they get back 142 in this trade. That would give them that plus 3 second-round picks if they wanted to give up their first rounder as well. Just want to throw that out there as a possibility. So that's all the background. General thoughts about the class, some guys the Packers have had in, some chances for them to trade up. What are they actually going to do? What are the Packers going to do when they sit down in the draft board Thursday night, in the war room Thursday night? Brian Gutekunst is there. Mark Murphy's hanging around somewhere. He parked the penny farthing outside somewhere at a bike rack outside on Lambeau Field. He's wearing his team-issued tie that he got with the pro shop discount. He's ready. He's ready to go. But he wants to wrap it up pretty quickly because you've got to make sure he catches the 10 o'clock news so he can get to bed, so he can be back at the office early in the morning. Just says, Brian, just wrap this up pretty quickly if we can. Anyway, what are the Packers going to do? Focusing primarily on the first round, looking at the board as it seems to shake out based on our analysis, based on other big boards that are out there, it looks like the value where the Packers are going to be picking is on the offensive line, at edge rusher, on the defensive line, and then a little bit at defensive back as well. Looking at how things have shaken out in the mock drafts that I've looked at, in the ones that I've run myself, the simulations at Pro Football Focus or whatever, my sense is that things are going to have to go really well for them if they want to get one of the top-tier offensive linemen at 25. And I'm focusing on that position because that seems like their biggest remaining need and also the highest value position where the Packers have a need. There's really not a safety that seems like a good fit at 25 unless you're putting Cooper DeJean at safety. There's really not another difference maker at another position. There certainly isn't a linebacker who makes sense at 25. And it is probably not a good idea to dump that many more resources into a position like inside linebacker anyway, if the Packers wanted to go that direction. So thankfully, there's not really a guy that makes sense there at the end of the first round. Offensive line really seems like the one that intersects with value and need. It's just a matter of who's going to be available there at 25. So looking at the potential for guys to be coming off the board ahead of 25, I'm leaning toward a trade up is what I think is going to happen. I'm probably like 60-40 on a trade up right now. 60% chance that they trade up somewhere beyond 25, most likely around 20, maybe up to 15, 40% staying put at 25. If they do, in fact, trade up, I lean toward the second option I outlined there. Well, technically the third option there, the first one was unrealistic. They're not trading up to seventh. Trading 25 and 52, maybe sweetening the deal a little bit to make all the numbers work. But getting up to around 15, maybe that 15 to 20 range, I think those are pretty realistic terms to shoot for. And if they trade up, I'm thinking it's J.C. Latham, Amarius Mims, or Troy Fatanu. That'd be my guess. I think they're probably looking offensive line. If they stand pat, Graham Barton or similar, an interior guy who might have some outside usability there too, a defensive back, or an edge rusher. I don't think they go defensive line in the first round. If they trade it back, that might be a possible there. But I'm feeling very confident in the offensive line right now. It would be a big surprise, I think, to see something other than offensive line or maybe defensive back, barring an insane fall for somebody in the draft. And you never know how these things end up shaking out. Obviously, we have the great historical example of Aaron Rodgers going at 24. So 25, anything can happen. Anything can happen anywhere in the draft, and anybody can be good. So that, I think, is really where I end up with this class. I think the Packers are probably going to be a little bit more aggressive about moving up than they have been in the past. I think 2020 still lingers in their mind a little bit, if not from a results perspective, because I think, obviously, they're pretty happy with Jordan Love, just as a what you think is going to happen, not playing out sort of perspective, because there's a run earlier on receivers than they anticipated, and they were unable to move up to get somebody. And then there was another run at receivers in the second round, and they were unable to move up again and get somebody. So I think they're going to, if they decide that this is their, this is something that they need to do, they're going to be aggressive about moving up and getting that guy. Brian Gutekunst did take pains to say that he never believes that teams are one or two guys away, which I'm not always sure that I agree with. In fact, I pretty much don't agree with that. I think the margins of error are so thin in any given NFL game between winning and losing that you're almost always one guy away, an injury to somebody, you know, straining your depth, or somebody just not being able to make a play. You look at how the Packers lost to the 49ers this past season. They definitely were a player or two away. A better play at safety and better play from their kicker would have sent the Packers to the NFC Championship game. It really no two ways about it. They were a couple players away in that game, and one or two of them would have made a big difference. So I don't think it's entirely true that teams are never just a player or two away, because we've seen a lot of situations where teams are a player or two away. Still, I think the Packers are going to be aggressive about getting the guys that they think that they want. Is that the best way to go about things? I don't know. We've been hard on process on the past in this podcast, and I think generally process and having a sound process is the best way to get results. But remember, results are all that matter. Even if you have a bad process and end up with good results, the results are all that you're going to be remembered for. The Los Angeles Rams, I think, went about the way that they won their Super Bowl, a way that flies in the face of what a lot of people considered sound team-building practices. And yet they ended up with the Super Bowl ring. And all the players on the team, the 65, 70 guys who ended up playing for the Rams that year, all the coaches, all the front office people, have a Super Bowl ring that they're going to have forever. 40 years from now, the process doesn't matter, but that ring is still going to be there, and they're going to have it. And you can always get out of bad process now with good process later, and that's something that the Rams have also done as well. They've been right back to being pretty competitive as injuries have sapped their team a little bit, sure, but they still got the ring, and the end result is all that matters. And to go back to our Ron Wolf example from a couple episodes ago, if you get three good guys out of the draft, it doesn't really matter what you did to get them. As long as you got those guys, you can build a successful team that way. Still better to fit with something resembling a coherent and solid process. It'll probably lead to more good results, but the results, again, are all that matter. Let's leave you with a couple other predictions here. I think the Packers are going to get their safety on day two, so that'd be round two or three of the draft. I think we're going to look at another scenario where the Packers end up trading back and accumulating a little bit more value there. That seems to be where the value for the defensive backs that could fit with what they're looking for is. So if they accumulate a little bit more value there in the second round, they might be able to squeeze another capable player out of that sector of the draft there. I think they're going to end up drafting multiple offensive linemen this weekend. It just seems like a strong possibility that they tried to add a lot of depth there. That's not really that far out on a limb there. If you're looking for specific predictions, if you want a super specific prediction, I like Trevon Wallace, the linebacker out of Kentucky. We mentioned him as a visit here, fits with their need. If nothing else, he should be a replacement for Isaiah McDuffie, who probably isn't a long-term retention candidate for the Packers, but Wallace should be a special teamer who could fill in for what the Packers are doing there. I think they're definitely going to draft a running back at some point this weekend. I think they're going to draft a wide receiver at some point this weekend. Just the value seems to be too great really throughout the draft here. You could even go as far as Bub Means, their way down in the sixth or seventh round as a potential target there. And then I think, again, they're going to trade back at some point in this draft. We're leaning toward a trade up early. I think Gutekunst will look to trade back at some point in the draft. So we've given you a pool of players to look for. J.C. Latham, Amarius Mims, Troy Fatanu, maybe Graham Barton, a defensive back, or an edge. That's four very soft predictions as far as a first-round name, but I feel pretty strong about the offensive line. Defensive back might be another fit there, or if you're just looking for more value from the positions that are available, edge rusher would be one there. And then if you want a day two or day three name, Trevon Wallace, the linebacker out of Kentucky, seems like a pretty good bet, given the Packers' strong track record of drafting guys that they've had in for visits. It just seems like a pretty exciting time to be watching the Packers with the guys that they've had in for visits and the needs that they have and how that aligns with the draft. I'm really looking forward to seeing what they end up doing there. And really, just to conclude, I'm excited for the draft in general, and I hope you are as well. It's been a long road to get here, been a long road since the end of the season, but now we can really start looking forward to 2024 and beyond. Free agency, kind of the appetizer there, and what an appetizer it was with what they ended up doing in free agency. Now we've got a chance to see the real 2024 Packers start to build together, and we'll see what happens after that all comes together. Next we start talking about undrafted free agents next week and roster building beyond that, and then it's just a couple months until training camp and we're off for the 2024 season. But that's getting the cart before the horse. We got to draft some guys first, and we're going to draft some guys here in the very near future. Thanks for sticking with us through the draft process. It does seem like it takes forever to get here, but I hope we are able to make it tolerable for you and give you a lot to think about heading into this weekend that we all get to enjoy together. So let's try to do that. Enjoy it. Have a fun time and see what great Packers are going to come to Green Bay over the next few days. So I've got for you on this episode of Blue 58. I appreciate you tuning in. I'd appreciate it even more if you'd take a second and share this episode with someone you think would enjoy it. It's going to help more people find the show and get more people involved in this conversation you and I are having about the Green Bay Packers, which in turn is going to help all of us, me included, become smarter Packers fans. And as I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I'm your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you next time on Blue 58.